To get us started, I will read page 123, Appendix L, in the 2021 through 2023 Red Service Manual. Okay, Appendix L, resolution authorizing the General Service Conference. A resolution offered by Bill W. and adopted at the 20th Anniversary Convention of AA in 1955. This resolution authorizes the General Service Conference to act for Alcoholics Anonymous and to become the successor to its co-founders. We, the members of the 20th Anniversary Convention of Alcoholics Anonymous, here assembled at St. Louis in July of the year 1955, declare our belief that our fellowship has now come of age and is entirely ready to assume full and permanent possession of the three legacies of our AA inheritance, the legacies of recovery, unity, and service. We believe that the General Service Conference of Alcoholics Anonymous, as created in 1951 by our co-founders, Dr. Bob S. and Bill W., and authorized by trustees of the Alcoholic Foundation, has now become entirely capable of assuming the guardianship of AA's 12 traditions and of taking over full guidance and control of the world service of our society. As provided in the Third Legacy Manual of World Service, with the asterisk one, now called the AA Service Manual, recently revised by our surviving co-founder, Bill W. Bill died January 24th, 1971, and of the General Service Board of Alcoholics Anonymous. We have also heard, with approval, Bill W.'s proposal that AA's General Service Conference should now become the permanent successor to the founders of Alcoholics Anonymous, inheriting from them all their former duties and special responsibilities, thus avoiding in future time all possible strivings for individual prestige or personal power, and also providing our society with the means of functioning on a permanent basis. Be it therefore resolved that the General Service Conference of Alcoholics Anonymous should become, as of this date, July 3rd, 1955, the guardian of the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. The perpetuators of the world services of our society, the voice of the group conscience of our entire fellowship, and the sole successors of its co-founders, Dr. Bob and Bill. And it is thus understood that neither the 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous nor the warranties of Article 12 of the Conference Charter shall ever be changed or amended by the General Service Conference, except by first asking the consent of the registered AA groups of the world. This would include all AA groups known to the General Service offices around the world, the asterisk or number three. Resolution, it was resolved by the 1976 General Service Conference that those instruments requiring consent of three quarters of the responding groups for change of or amendment would include the 12 steps of AA, should any such change or amendment ever be proposed. These groups shall be suitably notified of any proposal for change and shall be allowed no less than 6 months for consideration thereof. And before any such conference action can be taken, there must first be received in writing within the time allotted the consent of at least three quarters of all those registered groups who respond to such proposal. Bill uses the term registered AAWS, neither Bill uses the term registered. AAWS neither monitors nor oversees the activities or practices of any AA group. Groups are listed solely for purposes of accurate communications. We further understand that, as provided in Article 12 of the Conference Charter, the Conference binds itself to the Society of Alcoholics Anonymous by the following means. that in all its proceedings, the General Service Conference shall observe the spirit of the AA tradition, taking great care that the conference never becomes the seat of perilous wealth or power, that sufficient operating funds plus an ample reserve be its prudent financial principle, that none of the conference members shall ever be placed in a position of unqualified authority over any of the others, that all important decisions be reached by discussion, vote, and wherever possible, whenever possible, by substantial unanimity, that no conference action ever be personally punitive or an incitement to public controversy, that though the conference may act in the service of Alcoholics Anonymous and may traditionally direct its world services, it shall never enact laws or regulations binding on AA as a whole or upon any AA group or member thereof, nor shall it perform any other such acts of government, and that, like the Society of Alcoholics Anonymous, which it serves, the conference itself will always remain democratic in thought and action. This resolution was adopted by the convention by acclamation and in the conference by formal resolution by vote. St. Louis, Missouri, July 3rd, 1955. Whew. Please send questions directly to Billy through the chat. He will be answering questions throughout this presentation as he sees fit. And Billy, you'll have until 2 minutes to the top of the hour. The time is now yours.
Thanks, Brooke. Billy Alcoholic. Welcome, everyone. So a couple of housekeeping items. Tonight we have like a million appendixes to go through, which we're just going to at a high level. But I just want to talk about next week for a second. The conference charter, the bylaws of the General Service Board, will probably spend most of the time on the current, the original, and the bylaws of the General Service Board, and sometime on the AWS bylaws and the bylaws of the Grapevine. But you got to read them this week if you already haven't read them to really have questions and for next week. If you haven't seen the flyer, because people ask all the time, on September 9th, we're starting the 12 concepts, and it'll probably be 13 weeks. Tonight, we'll just do our best at a high level to go through the appendixes. I have the list in front of me. I'm going to do the best I can. But before the appendix, it's just important to know that there is a glossary in the service manual. Sometimes people don't realize that, but there actually is. It's on page 85. And it's just a lot of the most common words that we come into touch with. And then after the service manual, before we even get to Appendix A, I don't know why they don't make the glossary Appendix A and the maps Appendix B. But whatever, they don't have appendix numbers. But on pages 88 and 89... On 88 is a map of all the areas inside the United States and Canada, all 93 areas. On page 89 is a map of the provinces and territories of Canada and the states and territories of the United States and the regions. So, you know, if you don't know, here are the regions. There's eight of them. There's six in the United States. There's two in Canada, Eastern Canada and Western Canada. In the United States, we have the Pacific, the West Central, the Southwest, the East Central, the Southeast, and the Northeast. If you were to overlay the area map, you would see that the Northeast and the Pacific have a lot of areas. I'll just pass it on to you because it's come up over the last 20 years. Some people believe that the Pacific region and the Northeast region should be split, that they shouldn't be that large anymore. There's all kinds of reasons for that. Is it too much for one regional trustee? There's other people who believe that It's unfair that they have that many votes in their region for the trustee at large position. However, if you look at the election results of the last 30 years of trustees at large, they're not all from the Northwest, they're not all from the Pacific, and they're not all from the Northeast. In fact, the Southeast and the Southwest have had a lot of trustees at large, but I'm just throwing you in, just bringing you in on things that have gone on. You do see the Bahamas, the Cayman Islands, British Virgin Islands, St. Martin's, and U.S. Virgin Islands. Those are all part of Area 15, South Florida. Puerto Rico is its own area. That is Area 77. People say we're a two-country structure. I guess we used to be, but now we have the Cayman Islands. The U.S. Virgin Islands is part of the U.S., but the British Virgin Islands is not part of the U.S., and the Bahamas is not part of the U.S. There's probably two other places. Guantanamo Bay is technically part of the Virginia service structure. People ask, why Virginia? Well, because if you don't know this, Virginia, Norfolk, is a big Navy port and a big Navy base. And since Guantanamo Bay is a Navy and Marine Corps installation, the U.S. part of Cuba has always participated when they had AA groups there through Virginia. Cuba is its own structure, and Mexico actually sponsors Cuba in country-to-country sponsorship. It's easier for them to do than us because they have diplomatic relations. And but you should count your blessings, because I know somebody who goes down to Mexico a lot. I mean, down to Cuba a lot. And like, people go down there with suitcases full of literature because they can't get big books. They can't. The last time somebody I know that went down there, they can't get in their office, their small AA office, they can't get toner for their printers, and things that we just take as like so accepted that we can just, we don't have to go to Best Buy. We can just order it on Amazon. But Cuba is not NORMAP because it's not part of our structure. And these other things are, even though it shows Hawaii, there are territories further west than Hawaii, like the Marshall Islands and Guam, that are technically part of the U.S. structure, part of Hawaii. I don't know why they don't show them, but I didn't make the book. Inside Canada, you have provinces and territories. So you have Quebec, Ontario, New Brunswick, Nova Scotia, Newfoundland, all provinces, Saskatchewan, Manitoba, Alberta, and British Columbia. Those are all Canadian provinces. The Yukon, the Northwest Territories, Nunavut, are territories, not provinces, but they are part of Western Canada. It is important to note that inside Quebec, there are four delegate areas. I think you can see them here. It's 87, 88, 90, and 89. 87 and 88 are very small because they're very populated. Those other two in Quebec are more rural. Let's see what else. So they speak French there. They do have what they use the term Anglophiles. Those are residents or citizens who speak English. But Quebec is mostly French-speaking in AA and outside AA. That's why we've always been an official three-language conference, a Spanish, French, and English. Those are the three official languages of our general service structure. Some of you might watch what I write every once in a while. It's called, officially, the Intergroup Central Office AA World Services AA Grapevine Seminar. That was just this weekend in Las Vegas. I've been there twice. It's a great meeting of all the intergroups and central offices from all across the country. AWS and the Grapevine participate, obviously because of the amount of literature that they buy. It does drive me crazy that there are over 15 Spanish intergroups in California alone, and yet that flyer is not in Spanish, and they don't translate that event. So that event is really the English-speaking intergroup central office, AAWS, AA Grapevine. And I'm not here. It's not an outside issue. I'm just accepting the group conscience. We decided Spanish, French, and English were our three languages. I did hear that this weekend they finally voted to translate the flyer into Spanish, which that is a good start. I will give them a lot of credit there. But that is our map. A little something else about this. See if I can pull it up. Is a lot of areas have remote community committees. Now, I know what I'm going to say. I'm just giving you the history. I'm not trying to knock or attack or put down any work that anyone does. But today, when remote communities was started, it was, let me just find my, it was started for geographically remote. That's what it meant. It meant that you were truly in the middle of nowhere and AA contact was very difficult. When remote communities was started, the United States was not even in the picture, to be perfectly honest. That is not where remote communities started. If you look at your map, it really started up in Labrador on the right-hand side of your map, all the way up north in Canada. There is a First Nation tribe up there, the Inukatuk. They speak Inukatuk. And then if you go around, if you go on top of Manitoba, you see it's pronounced Nunavut, Nunavut, up on the Arctic Circle, up in the Northwest Territories, certain parts of Yukon, and then certain parts of Alaska outside of the continental U.S. were areas that are super remote and hard to get to. I was trying to find... because now, today, we say, oh, well, the so-and-so community inside our populated area are remote because they don't get service or whatever. But I'm just letting you know why it was started. Let me just see if I can find one of these cards to show you. So... the first original card, and if you look on your map, you will see Area 90. If you look on your map, it's a part of Ontario that goes up to the Arctic Circle. So this is the original card. That's it right there. It says, help for alcoholics. If you want to drink and can, that's your business. If you want to stop and can't, that's our business. Call Alcoholics Anonymous with the 1-800 number in Canada. And then, believe it or not, this was in the 90s. They were one of the first to have a website, www.aa90.org. Now, on the reverse side of that card, if you can see this, is the card in Inukatuk. Now, they used to give the helicopter pilots and the pilots who brought supplies in and everyone they could think of who would come into contact, doctors, nurses, everybody, these cards. That's where remote communities started, right up there at the top of Area 90. So if you go on to Appendix A, it's the legacy of service, which is important to read. But probably the most important thing to read is the anti-arrogance paragraph, I call it. Because sometimes in general service, we start to think that we are the only ones who do service. And it's like if you're at a convention or a conference or a roundup or wherever, and you say code words like, "Are you in service?" Well, what does that mean? For some of us, we want to know if you're in general service, but general service is only one part of service. On page 91, second paragraph, it says, "Hence, an AA service is anything, whatever, that helps to reach a fellow sufferer, ranging all the way from 12-step itself to a 10-step phone call and a cup of coffee, and to AA General Service Office for National International Action. The sum total of all these services is our third legacy of service." Just a reminder that we don't judge what kind of service people do or what kind of service people are attracted to. We actually don't have enough people doing service in all areas of service. So we want people to find the place that they like to do service. There's a couple of things in here about fellowship and responsibility. I do want to go to a particular page. Hold on. On page 99 is it talks about the birth of the conference. But there it gives you the early, historical information. To give the conference continuity, delegates would be divided into two panels. An odd-numbered panel, panel one, elected for 2 years, wouldn't be invited in 1951, the first year. An even-number panel, panel two, elected for 2 years, would be seated in 1952. Thereafter, one panel would be elected and one panel would be retired yearly. This would cause the conference to rotate while maintaining continuity. It goes down, it's in the last paragraph to say, but when these delegates met in conference, what would they do? We thought they would want to have real authority. So in the charter drawn for the conference itself, it was provided that the delegates could issue flat directions to the trustees on a two-thirds note. And even a simple vote, majority vote, would constitute a strong suggestion. If you're a follower of the conference, the conference has been wrestling with this for a while because we don't have a strong suggestion PDF. We have an advisory action PDF of what advisory actions got two-thirds. But hence it does say here, even a simple majority of the conference should be a suggestion to the trustees. Then I can't help but love the bottom of page 99. I almost wish it was its own section because I think people who ask questions make AA leaders better. But sometimes there is this trend where if you ask a question, you're a troublemaker. And I'm not a big fan of that trend. I think everybody, as long as they're responsible and polite, to be able to ask all the questions they want. And it goes on here, delegates encouraged to question. The first conference was set for April 1951. In came the delegates. They looked over our officers, Seller to Garrett. The original service manual said to kick the tires. But listen to this. They looked over our offices, Seller to Garrett, got acquainted with the whole staff, and shook hands with the trustees. That evening, we gave them a briefing session under the name, "What's on Your Mind?" We answered scores of questions of all kinds. The delegates began to feel at home and reassured. How about this next line? They inspected the finances with a microscope, not from a high level, not from any kind of condensed, with a microscope. And they had listened to reports from the Board of Trustees and from all the services. There was warm but cordial debate on many a question of policy. Trustees submitted several of their own serious problems for the opinion of the conference. So it's just clear from the start of this, the only way it works is if people ask questions and if people are encouraged to ask questions. Now, Appendix B, I hate to even have to admit that it's an appendix. Like, it is our 12 traditions, okay? The short form and the long form. But I will throw this out. It is impossible to understand the concepts without understanding the traditions. I actually think it's... Think about when you meet new people at a meeting, especially someone at like their first or second meeting, and you go to coffee with them or whatever, or maybe somebody's at their third meeting and they're finally thinking like, you know, I think I'm going to like give this AA thing a try. Like, I might get a sponsor. Maybe I'll talk to someone today. A lot of the questions in the beginning have nothing to do with the steps and all to do with the traditions. Those are the questions that are going through alcoholics' minds. Where's the money going? Who's getting rich on this? Who's in charge? Who's the president? What God do I have to believe in? Do I have to believe in God? That AA meeting meets in a Methodist church. That other AA meeting meets in a Catholic church. That other AA meeting meets in a Unitarian church, and that other one meets in a synagogue. Is it because there's different AA for different religions? No. Same AA. And also a reminder that for a lot of us that do a lot of complaining about religions, these are pretty open-minded people who let us meet in their buildings, even if we are finding a higher power that's different than theirs. But it is super important when we come into contact with newcomers that we know the traditions, what AA is and what AA is not. But they're there. Appendix C is the structure, the picture of the upside-down triangle. AA groups, GSRs, districts, area assemblies, general service conference, general service board. I don't know why they have GSRs there. Just because I like things that are uniform. So if they were going to have GSRs there, why don't they have DCMs below the districts? And if they're going to have GSRs there, why don't they have delegates below the area assemblies? But they don't. But the thing that it's important to know is this is a picture of concept one. And that AA meetings and AA members are not inside the structure. Groups are inside the structure. Anybody can be a member, a meeting can be a meeting, but the people who have a vote are the AA groups. Let's see, Appendix D. I just want to go to the back of Appendix C is an org chart. That's on page 104. And they have the conference committees on the left and the trustees committees on the right. If you count them, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, still 11. And then two secondary committees, which are archives and international conventions regional forums. So there's 11 permanent primary committees, two secondary committees. Why are they secondary in an organization where we have no second-class citizens? Because they don't get a lot of stuff on their agenda, so there's not a lot of work to be done. On the other side, you have the trustee committees, and they show 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. They show 10 committees, and then they show this other bucket, general sharing, audit, compensation, legal affairs, employees' retirement, retired medical benefits fund. So the trustees have a lot of committees. Some of them match the name of conference committees. Some do not. Most conference committees have a corresponding trustees committee. The finance conference committee, its corresponding committee is the trustees finance and budget committee. The conference corrections committee, it's the trustees corrections. Conference literature, it's trustees literature. Conference trustees, it's trustees nominating is the corresponding committee. Cooperate with professional community is CPC treatment and accessibilities for the trustees. Treatment and accessibilities is The same one, CPC, treatment and accessibilities. Public information is trustees' public information. Conference agenda and conference policy and admissions. They both have the same corresponding committee. It's the trustees' conference committee. Archives is archives. International convention regional forums is international conventions regional forums. Grapevine Lavinia is the Grapevine board. And report and charter technically does not have a corresponding trustees committee. Their equal of a corresponding trustees committee is the AAWS publishing department. That's who the report and charter committee works with. The trustees international committee is different than international conventions and regional forums. It's two separate trustee committees. The conference does not have an international committee because the conference deals with U.S., Canada, the islands. The trustees get invited all over the place. That's why the international committee deals with our dealing with the rest of the world. The trustees international convention and regional forums deals with regional forums and the international convention. Do we go to Appendix D is sample area meeting format, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that, only because there's not one area that's going to match this. But just for me to remind you, you should be aware that your area probably has guidelines or has, might call them, well, some might call them procedures, some may call them legacy of service, some may call them guidelines, some may call them, I'll get to another name, the one in my area. But you're not going to learn about your area by reading the service manual and how your area does business. You have to talk to your DCM or your delegate or your area chair, find out where how your area does business is codified. Some areas even have what they call their own service manual. What we have now, 70 years later, by the way, is way too many rules and regulations that don't even correspond with each other in a lot of areas. We just pass motion after motion after motion and never clean up what was done in the past. So all I can suggest is that you find out how your area does this. Appendix E, the principle of rotation. So how important is rotation? It has its own appendix. Here is where one of the biggest urban myths in all of Alcoholics Anonymous is finally put to bed, which is we can't remove somebody who's not doing their job. We have a nice way of saying it, like we always do. We don't say this is the section for the person who wanted the title but didn't do their job. We just nicely say inactive GSR DCM trusted servant. And what does it say? Sometimes a trusted servant who has been elected or appointed to serve the fellowship may find that their life circumstances change or the service workload becomes unwieldy. If there is an alternate for the position, that person may be able to help. But difficult decisions may need to be made in order to ensure continuity of the fellowship voice in the service structure. So it's a tradition one reminder that the fellowship is more important than any of us. So when the person, because we all have one, maybe you have five, but we all have at least one who's going to accuse you of making someone drink. They're going to say, if you take this position away from somebody, they are going to drink. The service structure is not responsible for people drinking or not drinking. Okay? That is on the recovery side of the house. But we are responsible for tradition one. And it says right here, to ensure continuity of the fellowship voice in the service structure. Each service entity has autonomy, what constitutes an inactive trusted servant, whether it is GSR, DCM, or other service position. And then it gives a helpful hint here. Experience in the fellowship suggests that the trusted servant be asked to resign if it appears they are unable to carry out the responsibilities of that position. The service entity involved is then free to elect a new trusted servant. And that means privately, with dignity and kindness. Like if you're the chair, you call the person and walk through it and talk it out. But there are times when someone needs to be removed. Now, we're a weird organization on a lot of levels. One of those levels I'll pass on to you. If you don't do your job in AA and don't show up, you will have like a room full of people who will be taking your side, pointing fingers at the people who want to ensure the continuity of AA. If you do your job, you're going to have a room full of people questioning you that you're doing too much of your job. So we're an interesting place with a fine balance of those two things. Sometimes people will say it's punitive to remove an inactive trusted servant. I would give you the best example I was given. If somebody won't resign and they're not doing their job, removing them is not punitive. However, if you have a district newsletter or area newsletter or in your minutes and you write an article or a paragraph about removing somebody, that's punitive. You don't need to drag the name through the mud. You don't need to do any of that. You document what happened in a single sentence, and then you have an election. That would be punitive, dragging the person through the mud. The next appendix is F, changing boundaries, redistricting. So it's very interesting here. I want to stress this because a lot of bad information out around this topic. Redistricting, obviously that applies to a district. If it were not for adding committee members to take care of new groups as AA grows, the General Service Conference might well become unwieldy. As the number of groups increase and it becomes too difficult for the DCM to communicate with all of them, several courses can be followed. It talks about new districts. It talks about having a local committee member, which is kind of like a DCM at large or a zone leader in some areas. But what it doesn't talk about is it's none of anybody's business what district a group wants to be part of. That's a group's decision. And then it's up to the district to decide if they want to let that group in the district. It is not up to the area or the conference. Forming a new delegate area. And I guess I would explain to you that if we could go back to that map a second. The one on page 88, the one of the areas. If you look at New York, Area 48, and then you look at Area 83 and Area 86, and then if you go up to Maine, which is Area 28, right next to Area 88, which is a French-speaking Quebec area, it's important to know that there are groups on either side of the border that belong to the other side structure. So there are groups in New York that belong to the Canada structure and in Maine because it's easier for them to participate there. And that's none of our business. That's the group's business. There are groups in Canada that choose to participate in the New York and the Maine side. Most people don't realize that in the north of Maine, there are French-speaking areas where there's a lot of French-speaking, even on the U.S. border side of Maine. What I'm trying to get here is we love to interfere in business that's not our business. Now, forming a new delegate area, this is important because we've had two new formed. We've had one form in LA, the old Area 5 is now Area 5 and Area 93. That was the last area formed in 99. And that was formed because there were simply too many groups in that LA area. The area before that, Area 92, is Eastern Washington. Back then, because of the mountain range, during the winter, people on either side of the mountains in Washington couldn't go to the assemblies usually because the weather was too bad driving through the mountains. That area was formed. I only bring this up because I know in the area that I live in, which is Area 15, Southern Florida, a motion is coming from a district in October to put together a feasibility committee to look at maybe dividing Area 15. And I know that was looked at like 20 years ago. I would just tell you it's important to look at this section of the service manual because it's not like something that doesn't happen all the time. Like every once in a while, somebody or some district or a group of people in an area think that their area needs to be divided or split. There is information here about changing regions and exactly how to do it. Minnesota used to be part of the East Central, they're part of the West Central. What's the other one somebody just told me? I think Utah used to be part of the Southwest and is now part of the Pacific region. Louisiana was almost part of the Southwest, but they chose to be in the Southeast. But helpful information here. The process is there. Appendix G is the third legacy procedure. It's pretty self-explanatory, but it's not something you can learn really learn by reading. I would really suggest, even if you're not into general service or you don't like, if your area is having an election this fall, go to it. Watch Third Legacy Procedure in person. It's written ballot, secret ballot, written ballot. But it's a way that we use to make sure no one can be railroaded through by popularity. So you have one vote. If someone got two-thirds, they won. If they didn't, you go to the next ballot, ballot two. If someone got two-thirds, they win. However, after ballot two, you remove anybody's name who has less than one-fifth of the count. They drop off. And then you have a ballot three. If somebody has two-thirds, they win. If they don't, you go to ballot four, but before that, you drop off anyone who has less than one-third of all the ballots. You drop off. Then you have ballot four. Did someone get two-thirds? They're elected. Chairperson asks for a motion to conduct a fifth ballot. That's a little urban myth too sometimes because people say a motion to go to the hat. There is no motion required to go to the hat. The motion is to have the fifth ballot. If there is no motion for a fifth ballot, or if the fifth ballot motion fails, you go to the hat. Now, an important part about going to the hat. If you are chosen out of the hat, it does not mean that you were chosen by God. I know that some people say that sometimes, but it's a pretty arrogant statement. It does not mean that God liked you better than the other person that was in the hat. It means that we left it up to lot, that we feel both people in the hat are qualified, and to separate principles from personalities, we simply choose one out. The next appendix that we have to talk about is the new group form. That's right there. The group information change form is right there. I'm hoping that soon they're going to have on the group form, are you a meeting or a group? So that we're not just listing new groups. If a meeting just wants to be a meeting, we're not having another group with another GSR that's not really a group. The group change form is there. Appendix J is the DCM change form. Let's see. The conference charter, I believe we're doing next week. We read the resolution tonight. The bylaws we're doing next week. And the bylaws are complicated. I'm just warning everyone. So if you want to read them, Appendix R is a suggested list of literature. It's all right here. I'm sure you saw that the Plain Language Big Book is going to come out in November. If you didn't get that, a note from the General Service Office to all delegates went out and was passed on to groups, hopefully, by those delegates. For those people that can't help themselves and say that central offices and intergroup are not AA, I just want to point to the Appendix S section of the AA service manual, which is for intergroups and central offices. The way I read that, they must be AA because they're in the AA service manual. Intergroups and general service offices are just not part of the general service structure. But there's a lot of good information in there about general service offices, about central offices. There's the history of the grapevine. I want to see if there's anything. I did want to spend time on Appendix V, stimulating interest in general service. It's a decent paragraph, but I want to just go and share my experience in that. It might be more helpful if you're in a district or an area where you're having trouble getting participation. It might be good to put your hands in the air and drop the service manual and pick up a big book where there is a section on inventory, but not taking other people's, but our own. And what might be a good idea if you have a problem with participation in district and area is instead of complaining about everyone else, is taking a hard look in the mirror and saying, what are we doing that's not working? And is there anything we're doing that's pushing people away? Those are two very, very important questions. How the conference operates is in here. It's interesting. But it's interesting if you're a delegate and you're at the General Service Conference. But I want to leave time for a couple of questions, so I'm going to stop there. My question is twofold. Our area, I'm not going to read what the area is because it doesn't matter. Our area has 135 meetings, but only 23 GSRs. To address the slack, I am charged with designing a flyer to hopefully stimulate interest. Any suggestions to spark interest in general service? But my main question is, are you saying that any given group can decide independently to just switch to another district? Aren't districts determined by geography? What I am saying is that if a group thinks that it would be better served in another district, they have the right to go ask that district if they could participate there. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying that districts don't tell, like your district, your geographic district, because let's go back to the map for a second. I just want to. So, if you would go to the state map, not the area map, especially in the middle of the United States, there are certain cities that are on rivers. And the other side of the river is a different state. And even though it's a different state, the people who live in that like 20-mile square mile area, they all consider themselves from the St. Louis metropolitan area. Or this Kansas City, Kansas, and Kansas City, Kansas, and Kansas City, Missouri. Like, it's okay to do what's practical. So Alaska is in the Pacific region for the person who just asked the question. So I'm saying that we can be flexible. That's what I'm saying. It's definitely not for an area to tell a district where they can't be, or a group where they can't be. That group, if it wants to belong to a different district, should vote to do it and go talk to that district. But where this really gets me crazy, and I've already been pummeled on this topic, so I hate to even talk about it because it's probably the biggest beating I took last year. Unfortunately, there was a group of officers in an area, and this area did not have a Spanish linguistic district. And because of that, some of the Spanish groups in this area belong to a Spanish district in the area next door, which is fine. But last year, some of those Spanish groups in the area without a Spanish district decided they wanted to form a linguistic difference district. Now, if people think that old ideas and prejudice and stuff like that never happens in AA, they're just wrong. Those area officers refused and told the Spanish that they needed permission of the General Service Conference to start a Spanish district in their area. A conference action. I mean, how insane is that? Like, how controlling is that that some people will go to that level? Thank God somebody from GSO sent an email saying that is not a conference topic. It's not the conference's business. All I'm saying is we should be practical. That's it. Let's see. Okay. Whenever anybody warns me that this might be like a hot topic question, let's see. Has there any been any discussion within the conference around only having the traditions in the long form and retiring the short form? It seems to me that there are several traditions, tradition three in particular, and seven to a lesser extent, that are almost contradictory and cause a dilution of the A message. I don't know if it's ever come to the conference to get rid of them. The truth is, they were created so they could fit on a shade, so that more people could, see them. If you read Tradition 3 out of context, yes. If you read the narrative, every alcoholic, not every human being, every alcoholic is a member if they say they are. So if you're an alcoholic with a desire to stop drinking, you can be an AA member. The long form's clear, so is the short form if you look at it the right way. A desire to stop drinking, but not being an alcoholic, that's like jacks are better to open in poker. That will get you into a closed meeting because you have a desire and you have a drinking problem, but you have not yet admitted you're an alcoholic. But alcoholic AA membership is for alcoholics. I know that is a hard concept for some people to understand, but that is what it says. Principle of rotation, the term elected or appointed are used in the service manual. In the GSR pamphlet, it says procedures for electing a GSR is the same are the same as for any other group officer. There should be time for nominations from the floor, then written ballots. A plurality is usually enough for election. Question, where does volunteer fall into place? If someone has been nominated before the vote, is it a requirement to stop and open the floor for volunteers? I hope that. Here's what I would say. The less complication, the better. At your group level, you don't have to overcomplicate it and have third legacy voting. Now, if you're a huge group, you might. The service manual warns against nominations in most other places because nominations look like personal endorsements. Our literature talks about self-nomination. In other words, is anyone interested in being the coffee maker? I'm Billy. I'm interested. Not somebody across the room saying, I nominate Billy, because that makes it look like that person is endorsing me. We have self-nomination. Do we ask for volunteers? For simple positions, yes, but for most positions, we should just ask who's interested in standing for election. Otherwise, it looks like we're a popularity contest. Flexible, but it shouldn't be arbitrary. I'm not talking about arbitrary. Flexible to me means a district having a group conscience and saying, yes, it makes sense. That group lives in that district, but they're closer to us where we meet, not arbitrary. What would be the process to switch from being a group to a meeting since the group already has a group number? Well, whoever wrote that question, if you had the answer, you would probably be the wealthiest person in Alcoholics Anonymous because that's our problem. We gave all these meetings group numbers. And some people say, does it really cause a problem? I will tell you yes. Every year we say how much per group would be self-supporting for GSO. No, it's not, because we use the total number of groups, which include all the meetings that have group numbers. Let's see, last one. The motion that was put forth in writing at the business meeting of the 39th Annual Intergroup Central Office of Alcoholics Anonymous was to invite all Hispanic Central Offices and Intergroups and send them a welcome packet. That motion passed with substantial unanimity. That's awesome. I am so happy about that. And sometimes, I know we're supposed to be all principled, principled, principled. But sometimes you just need to call people out. Sometimes you just need to step up and say, hey, listen, this is wrong. Let's see. I have seen the third legacy. Brooke, I'll give this back to you in 1 minute. I've seen the third legacy procedure circumvented at every level by usually the same people organizing well prior to voting day. Do you have any experience with this? How to best handle this? That is an awesome question. Could the person who has control of the chat cut and paste that question so that I could deal with it first next week? Because that's a great question. We should not have politicking, but I want to go into that question in detail next week. Thanks, Brooke. See everybody next week.
All audio and video files on the District6AA.org website or the District 6 in Area 15 YouTube channel are for personal use only. Reproduction, distribution, and commercial use are not permitted. In accordance with District 6 current practice, no faces are shown in our videos and audio is scrubbed for anonymity prior to publishing. Contributors whose voices are heard have given record and release consent. Opinions expressed by the presenter are their own and do not necessarily represent the group conscience of District 6 as a whole.